I think most of us in the strength world feel like everyone would like strength training if they just kind of had some success with it.
Welcome to the Bar Bend Podcast, where we talk to the smartest athletes, coaches, and minds from around the world of strength. I'm your host, David Thomas Tao, and this podcast is presented by barbend.com. Today, I'm talking to Albert Matheny, co-founder of Soho Strength Lab in New York City and the COO of Arena, a fitness technology startup that's launching in late 2020. Albert joins us to talk about the harsh realities of the gym business during COVID-19, including the factors that go into whether owners and operators are even able to keep their facilities open. We also talk about why he steered his gym away from being, and I quote, an Instagram gym. And then the conversation focuses in on Arena, which is attempting to bring full-body strength training to a device that could fit in your suitcase. How do you perform 200-pound front squats with something that weighs under 40 pounds? All that and more coming up. Also, I want to take a second to say we're incredibly thankful that you listen to this podcast. So if you haven't already, please be sure to leave a rating and review of the Bar Bend Podcast in your app of choice. Now let's get to it. Albert, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. You're someone who wears a lot of different hats, and I want to cover a lot of ground on this podcast, but the thing that I really want to focus in on first is you're a gym owner, and you own a gym in one of the most expensive parts of one of the most expensive cities in the world. You are an owner of Soho Strength Lab in New York City. In Soho, how have you weathered this storm?
That's a good question, David, and I really appreciate being on here. I'm excited to talk to you today. So with the gym, it's been interesting. I mean, honestly, the best part has been just our team of trainers. We've got a really good team. You know, like we're a gym that we're not a big box gym. You know, it's boutique and it's one that's been around. We started in 2013 with Ryan Hopkins and at that time Andy Spear, who's now gone on to big Peloton fame. You know, we just really always kept our quality really high. And I think in any kind of market, if you're offering a really premium product that's differentiated, there's going to be customers for it. And, you know, what we've seen is just trainers were really quick to their business. You know, a lot of the clients left the city, but they were going places and they wanted to, you know, keep up their fitness and go to Zoom. And we've been able to open up even new markets. You know, when you're a retailer, you know, unlike e-commerce, you're kind of restricted to a pretty small, well, in New York, it can be a pretty big pool. But, you know, we've been able to do better with that. We're seeing people on the West Coast now. And then, you know, we had a second facility, which was group fitness focused and semi-private training, and that was harder. There's only so much you can do with that.
So that second facility that you all had, you did have to close it during COVID.
Yeah.
And when did, like, what was that decision process like? You know, when did you, obviously New York went to lockdown in early March. When was kind of the writing on the wall when you're like, hey, this second facility that's more group fitness oriented, we've got to shutter it. How long did that take to kind of come to that realization?
Yeah. You know, I don't know how familiar, you know, the everyone is with it, but, you know, there were the PPP loans and things like that. We applied for what we were, you know, able to. And, you know, that was kind of one of those like bridges to kind of see, would that get you back to kind of normal business? And we saw that kind of run out. We were able to, you know, keep up with our, you know, trainers and our rent and everything like that. But basically when we made that decision, looking at what the city was allowing, which is still certainly not just like restaurants, you know, not full functioning of a group fitness space, just the way the regulations are, you probably understand the business model, like just like a restaurant, you really got to be, you know, 80%+ full to be making profit. And so being restrained still to where that's not a reality, made that decision for us. And then I think there's still on the customer side, even if that was available, I don't think you would see that 80%, you know, say that the city said tomorrow you can open up 100% group fitness. I don't think you would see 80% of your previous clientele return.
Yeah.
You
know? There's a level of, some people have left the city, but there's also a level of personal comfort with that. People just want to be at a distance, which, you know, how can you blame them, right? That's everyone's decision right now. I will ask, so you kind of got both sides of the coin here. You were able to keep one facility open and keep that brand strong, which is absolutely fantastic. At the same time, you've had to experience shuttering a separate facility, which is, you know, which no one ever wants to do, which no gym owner, no business owner ever wants to do. So call it, you know, middle of the road, and that you've actually outperformed a lot of gyms I know in New York City who have just had to shut down completely. They might have had multiple facilities, multiple locations, or just one, and they don't exist anymore, or at least are clearly on the path to having to completely shutter. Do you have any idea what percentage of independent gyms, if you just have to guess, I'm not going to hold you to this, we might see shutter permanently in a city like New York after all this is said and done?
I would tend to kind of make a what would seem like an outrageous kind of really high percentage. But, you know, I think you know the industry well enough that it wasn't just a factor of COVID. It was a factor of the boutique boom that has been happening over the past, I don't know, you know, really since we started in 2013, it's just been kind of ramping up and ramping up, and new studios and new concepts. And that's all kind of like, everyone's kind of still eating off the same pie, even though the consumer group's growing. So there was a lot of businesses that were kind of doing okay pre-COVID. And then you had a lot that were on kind of a death spiral with ClassPass, you know, and ClassPass obviously went to literally zero. You know, I think I've, you know, heard their CEO talk about their bookings went from this to near zero, and they've kind of pivoted. But yeah, I think it accelerated a lot of, everyone says it accelerated trends that were in place, but I think 75% honestly is not unreasonable, maybe even higher. Just because I would say without COVID, 40% of those should have closed. You know, they weren't profitable. And then put COVID on top of that and another, yeah. So a big percentage.
I mean, you bring up a good point, because the fitness market, while it's growing, while we like to think the number of people who care about their health and wellness and are investing in their fitness, we like to think that's growing, and signs point to the fact that it is. But it certainly wasn't growing at the rate that new boutique fitness concepts were opening nationally, and certainly not in New York City. I felt like in Midtown, I'd walk down a block and I'd see three new boutique fitness studios, each specializing in one different thing, opening up within a few months of each other on the same block. They're fighting over the same customer base that's not tripling in size every year. So I think you bring up a good point that we were probably due for a bubble burst at some point, or at least some sort of reckoning in that experience. What are some fitness concepts that you think are more likely to weather the storm and survive long-term right now?
Yeah, I think it's one that I was actually talking to a guy who knows the space really well the other day. And he said, you know, one thing you're not getting over, and I think you'll appreciate this, one thing you can't really get over Zoom is when you actually do need or want someone physically helping you in training. So like more of the higher performance training, you know, maybe you're going for a heavy squat, or, you know, you're doing something very technical. You're not getting that over Zoom. It's just not the same. Like, you need someone physically there that can basically, you know, 360 walk around you, help with setup, really be engaged in a high touch kind of way. So those gyms, and that's what our gym has always been in the personal training side. So we've been able to do that. People coming back from injury rehab and things like that, like, you're just going to get a better experience in person, because there's nuances that don't carry over on screen, and you need to physically be with someone. So that those kind of gyms will stick around, you know, the ones that have the real personal touch. I think as far as like boutique concepts, I think, it's hard to say. I think it's the big guys, you know, Barry's and SoulCycle and those kind of companies, you know, they'll probably cut some underperforming locations, but they've got enough capital. I think it's mostly a capital game. Like, you know, the want for fitness hasn't disappeared. You know, it shifted online. People will want to go back to physical locations, but I think it'll be the few brands that you would probably know off the top of your head that have done a good job for a number of years and have been able to kind of just have a brand beyond individual instructors driving, you know, people wanting to come. Because as individual instructors, a lot of them are realizing, if they didn't already know, that they can really run a direct instructor business where they don't need a brand kind of shepherding people. They're able to connect directly. And that's been a trend that's happening already, you know, with Instagram and everything. Like, that was already kind of eroding the kind of like holding structure. Yeah.
Well, I felt like there was a boom about a year and a half ago when I was seeing so many people that wanted to start platforms for fitness. And I kept hearing about platforms. And it was all a lot of variations. Not to say those are bad ideas. And I think some did bring a lot of unique value and some still will bring a lot of unique value. I'm not really a software guy, so I'm not the best person to say what's going to survive long-term. But I see a lot of trainers now that are just saying, well, maybe I'm not going to go to a fitness-specific platform. Maybe the platform I'm going to use is Instagram, and another platform I'm going to use is Zoom. And they're taking kind of these off-the-shelf solutions that aren't specific to fitness, and they're using that as their direct-to-consumer platform, and their marketing is just their personal social following. How do you, as a gym owner, balance working with trainers who bring that and can maybe bring feet into your location or bring eyeballs onto your brand, while also respecting that, like, that's their audience that they're bringing? There's a bit of a balance there. How do you address that when working with potential instructors or considering bringing people on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, to be honest, very consciously, we've never wanted to be an Instagram gym. You know, that was kind of like a big filter for us before COVID. Since day one, was kind of like, we want people who are interested in being trainers, you know, in the traditional sense of the word, more than, you know, because Instagram is not, it's a whole different skill set in business, you know.
Are you telling me Instagram isn't reality? Is that what you're telling me? Yeah.
You don't get your CSCS and also get your Instagram onboarding workshop or whatever it is, you know. So like, yeah, that's been a blessing for us. And we, you know, we saw that, we've gone through working with people like that, and it is always a difficult balance. I think most studios, again, it plays into the hands of the big players that have a platform that eclipses whatever personal social platform the instructors have. So like a Barry's or a SoulCycle, those used to be kind of like the, you know, the ladder that people would get on, and they would get shoved into the spotlight and they'd build their career there. And smaller brands, I think it's always been tough that you kind of, you are competing for that instructor's attention. And we always just chose not to. You know, we wanted people who were not Instagram leaning so much as they were, is like, I want to be in an environment where I'm constantly learning and working with other good trainers. You know, people that are in the profession for training, not for Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back to like, why are you starting the facility? Soho Strength Lab, you are a strength and conditioning gym, right? You can get a lot of things out of that facility, but you walk in and it's not a boot camp gym. You're seeing people doing real training. You're seeing people doing heavy back squats. You're seeing people do prowler pushes, you know, as miserable as that makes the average person look. So it seems to me like, even though you all started kind of during this wave of the boutique gym rise in 2013, that the emphasis was actually maybe a little more old school than your Soho location might imply.
Totally. And that was just kind of a byproduct of where we had come up training in the city. And, you know, it's a cool vibe down there. There's a lot of actual, it's a good place for a gym for, as you know, like when you talk about Midtown or FIDI or different places, like Soho has a mix of commercial people coming there for work, and then also has a lot of residents, where I think you go other locations and you're really separated between what are the peak hours. Is it everyone's before work and then at 5 it's a ghost town? Or is it, you know, everyone comes and it's Bryant Park and it's like lunchtime craziness or something? So like Soho was a good spot for us in that regard, that and we're also if you look at a Soho map, I would call us, we could also, you know, we like branding. That was a conscious choice to say Soho. When you look at the map, we're literally kind of on the cusp and we're technically in like a little Italy. So for us, it was really taking a good lease at a space. I mean, at the end of the day, if your lease is expensive, which a lot of these boutiques saw, and unfortunately, I think they just had, you know, kind of VC type money and VC type expectations on exponential growth and all these different things. That put them in locations where even without COVID, the price per square foot rent was just kind of not tenable. You know, you can't.
Yeah, it's almost like juggling on a unicycle while being chased by a pack of dogs. That might not be the scalable future of fitness. Yeah. And it felt like concepts were maybe getting that specific at a certain level. So, you know what? That might work in New York at a couple locations, but I don't know if they're going nationwide. I just don't know. I'm going to have to pass on that investment. Yeah. I'm going to pretend like I'm on Shark Tank right now. One thing I want to change tack a little bit, because you've been in the fitness industry for a while. You know the ups and downs of owning and operating gyms, as we've discussed in this call. And by the way, thank you for being so candid about the high points and very much the low points recently in being a gym owner. It's not easy to talk about. But one thing I know you're really passionate about, and one thing that I've been lucky enough to actually try in person, is one of your new projects, which is Arena. And the way I'm going to bill it, if I had to give like the elevator pitch for it, and this surprised me, it's the true strength training gym that basically fits in your suitcase. And I'll give a little background. Albert came by the Barband office, was kind enough to bring by a prototype of what he's building. And in an under 40-pound package, I was able to do loaded belt squats with about 200 pounds of resistance. And I've never seen a solution that allowed a strength athlete to do something like that. So, Albert, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about Arena, because, you know, this is not paid product placement. I was a bit blown away by what I was able to do with something that you literally just rolled into our office in what looked like a carry-on.
No, that means a lot, Dave. Thank you. So I am very excited about Arena. I got, you know, literally the technology kind of walked in my in Soho Strength Lab a few years ago. And when I saw it and I used it, it immediately just solved for me kind of like what you were saying is like, I can actually do strength training at my house now without a barbell setup or a garage gym.
Or it's worth noting, a heavy, heavy stack of weights. Like this is not a 500-pound stack. This thing literally weighs 40 pounds. Give us an idea of what it is. And obviously we'll talk about it in the description. If you visit Barbend and the corresponding post we'll have on this podcast, you'll be able to like see it. But if I'm just describing it without looking at it, like what is Arena?
Yeah. Arena kind of looks like what I would call like a step box, or, you know, it could look like jerk blocks or something like that. It just looks like a box, and it's 9.5 inches tall, and it's about 32 by 24 inches. You know, so it's smaller than a yoga mat. If you're trying to kind of like get some parameters around it, and what it is in a really simple format is a, cable that comes out of the middle of the box, and that cable goes directly into a motor, and that motor is controlled by a board or a computer. And through your phone, you can control that motor with a high degree of specificity to create immediate resistance, because a big differentiator for us versus, you know, some other strength products on the market is the fact that cable goes directly into the motor. There's no pulleys or anything involved. Like, you're getting immediate feedback. It's very much like a Tesla in that it's electric. You know, you pull on it and it immediately is 200 pounds or 100 pounds or whatever you want, just based on you moving your finger on the phone. So it is, as you mentioned, it weighs less than 40 pounds. And that's really just a factor of we wanted something that had enough heft to it, where it didn't kind of throw you off that you're messing with something that's, you know, 10 pounds and can create 200. So it really is like a, it's a, you know, all steel high grade product that really has some heft to it. And, you know, coming from the strength and conditioning background, we wanted something that was tough. You know, it's built to be used and built to, you know, really perform day in and day out. Something else technology wise that I really thought was cool, was with that direct drive into the motor, you're recapturing 80% of the power that the battery exerts to resist your movement. And so that allows us to, on a 45-minute charge, give you about a month worth of the workout. So that means, just like a suitcase, you can put that thing in the back of your car or truck and, you know, go see your parents for the weekend or whatever it might be. And especially now, a lot of people are traveling domestically. You can actually just take your gym with you. You know, you can do every type of pulling exercise that you want. And really those big, it, for me, as like, you probably appreciate like yourself, like, you know, when you can do a lot on your own body weight wise and all that kind of stuff, but getting some heavy compound movements is just like, you need that. That's like, you just need to have it. And this excels at that. And the way it is in terms of a single pull point centered, it's really great. And it makes it strength training more accessible for a lot of people. And that's like the bigger picture is like, you know, show people that more people need and can do and learn, you know, proper strength training.
The thing that immediately hit me when I saw a picture of this and then you brought it by the office, I was like, I have to do belt squats on this thing. Because belt squat setups, if you're a strength athlete, belt squats are a great solution to get some good lower body training without spinal loading. So you could be recovering from an injury. You could be just like not wanting to put a lot of pressure on your spine. It could be an accessory movement. Great way to overload the legs without overloading the spine. And it was the simplest belt squat setup I've ever seen. Now, I've done belt squats on big, like $2,000 machines with a big old weight stack. Some are plate loaded. And I've also done belt squats with like that, you know, I call it like a jerry rig setup where you're standing between two plyo boxes and the weight's hanging down on a weight belt. I've actually fallen off one of those. And it was like the scariest moment of my life with, you know, hundreds of pounds dangling between my legs. And I immediately got on this thing and was able to do belt squats. I just stood on the box, the cable attached to a weight belt, and from an app, I was able to immediately control the resistance. I was able to, even if I wanted to, determine like, here's my bottom point where I want resistance to stop, or here's where I want resistance to stop, or modulate at the top. It was great. It was the best belt squat solution I'd ever seen. But with this device, I know that you all are looking at a range of hundreds of exercises you want people to explore with this. People who might be doing sprint training, plyometric training, attach it to them. And you also talked about having a bunch of different attachments for pulling exercises. Basically, anything you can attach a cable to, you want this to be utilized for. Who is your target market? I know that you haven't officially released this. People can pre-order, but they can't like buy it yet. Who ultimately do you think will adopt this first? Because there are a range of different types of athletes who might want something like this. But like, who do you think it's going to catch on with potentially first?
That's great. That's a good question. So I think it's going to be, guys like you, honestly, Dave, where like you get it. And for me, I was like, cool, this thing allows me to deadlift heavy, front squat heavy, you know, in my apartment or something. And that for me is enough, period. You know, that now has solved a real need for me. And for you, it might just be, hey, you know, when I look at the other belt squat options, like this literally is a better solution at a better price point with more functionality done. So I think people that take their training pretty seriously and kind of have the programs and they look at this like a kind of like a multitasking, you know, kitchen accessory. Like, you know, it really can do a lot and you can figure out how you want it in your training program. And those people are more, you know, they're more advanced basically in terms of how they approach their training. I think the other big group, my, you know, original sports background was in endurance training. And, you know, most endurance athletes, I myself included, was not really comfortable in the weight room. It's just not something that's promoted in endurance training. And I think just like we see recovery now becoming the new thing, like strength training is going to be that for endurance training. And if you think, you know, your top endurance athletes aren't doing some strength training, you know, they are. But I think mainstream, you know, people who are runners or cyclists don't, for the most part, do strength training. And this, I think, is going to allow them to do it not only in an efficient format, it's, you know, space sensitive and everything like that, but it's just going to be simple for them. And there, it's, it has the, you kind of alluded to it with the belt squat, like you get data from this thing. I think that frustrates a lot of endurance athletes. They're very data driven people. And, you know, lifters certainly are too, but like the amount of data you get from, you know, your Strava or whatever it is, your running watch, your Garmin, it's a lot. And when you go to the weight room, you can't, you know, post that your total volume of weight lifted was 20,000 pounds today. And you did, you know, like people just don't know what that means. And so, this is a great way that people are going to be able to quantify it. So I think it's going to resonate with the endurance crowd, whether that's cycling, running, triathlon, and they're going to really get it. And then, like you said, basically just pulling motions. Like when I think of group fitness, what is the glaring thing? And I'm sure you've come to this conclusion too. The glaring issue with group fitness is there are no pulling exercises for the most part, you know, like, you know, like yoga, you know, it's like, where's your retraction? Where's your like big posterior chain kind of movements? It's just not there. And so for me, like, great if you're, you know, so all in all, it's really thinking of Arena as an and product. It's not an or, it's an and to whatever maybe your favorite thing is. I know not everyone loves to lift weights, but if you're a passionate cyclist or a passionate yogi or whatever it is, you need an and that needs to be strength training. You know, strength is, that was the foundation of Soho Strength Lab is, you know, everyone needs to be strong. You know, whatever it is you want to do, like for your health, for your sports performance, for just general longevity movement, you need a strength training base, period. You know, and the data and science supports that, you know, from every kind of health parameter.
I have good news for you, Albert. Most people listening to this podcast really like strength training.
Yeah.
So you know, you are preaching to the choir in the best way. And I love, we get feedback on this podcast. And sometimes when we talk about, because we've had endurance athletes on, we've had Olympic rowers on, we've had people who talk about how strength is complementing, strength might not be their core goal, but it's a means to an end. It's always cool to hear from that perspective. And then we'll hear feedback from our listeners. And it's just like, well, they should do more strength training. It's like, well, okay, that is for them, it's complimentary. But you know, I mean, you're very much right. And I think that the trend in sports performance, right, is to look at this, is to look at things holistically, right? Is to say, okay, what can benefit my performance on the field of play, whatever that is, be if I'm a triathlete, a runner, a hockey player, what's going to benefit that performance? And our perspectives are getting broader over time. Strength training is going to benefit that performance. Nutrition is. Good sleep is. Recovery. Mental training and mindset training. I was talking about this last night. I was watching The Queen's Gambit on Netflix, and I happen to have a friend who's used to be an extremely high-level chess player, and we've had long conversations about the benefits of strength training to elite chess players, right? So I love that perspective of thinking, okay, how is strength training going to become more accessible to these groups where maybe they're not trying to set a back squat PR. Maybe they're just trying to get their legs stronger, right? And I think it's that goal-oriented mindset because humans are very goal-oriented and we want to perform at a high level. So I really like that perspective. And I think that's something that I can see you've clearly taken from your time at Soho Strength Lab and now tried to productize it.
Yeah. And you know, like people, you, speaking to your audience, I think most of us in the strength world feel like everyone would like strength training if they just kind of had some success with it. And that's what I've seen at Soho Strength Lab over the years is like, you'll have men or women come in that have not done strength training in their life. And they say, I don't want to get bulky. I don't want to do this. I'm trying to lose weight, whatever it is. And we usually, the secret, which Arena benefits from, is people might be intimidated by a barbell and they might be intimidated by the numbers on dumbbells, but what they don't know is kilograms. And you give them kettlebells and they don't know that 10 kilograms is over 20 pounds, or they don't know that I can give someone who said this, you know, I'm never going to lift more than 25 pounds. I give them a 24 kilo kettlebell and they're happy to work with it. And Arena benefits from the same thing. Like, you don't see the weights, you don't see the big heavy stuff and the giant dumbbells. Like, you know, you go in a big gym and they've got 100 pound dumbbells and you're like, that's very large, you know, like that's a serious thing. But you put someone on Arena and you can put 100 pounds on there and it looks exactly the same as 20 pounds, you know? So I'm excited about that part, you know?
That's awesome. Well, Albert, where is the best place for people to keep up to date with the work you're doing, both, you know, as a gym owner and now as a, I guess, a fitness tech entrepreneur? Is that a term? Sure, we'll use that term. Where's the best place to keep up to date with you?
I'd honestly point everyone over to two places. I mean, my Instagram I'm a fitness guy. I'm not an Instagram guy, so I'll leave it at that. But I try to repost things. Go.arena is our Instagram handle, and we've got a great team of all fitness people, real fitness people running it. They also just happen to do Instagram, so we're keeping it real there. Arena is also, I just want to mention this, everything is assembled in the USA. The battery is the only thing that's not made here, which is really cool. And that was a big part of, you know, something that I care about is doing things in the USA. And then the other place is our Soho Strength Lab Instagram channel. My partner Ryan Hopkins is, I would say, the best trainer in New York. So check him out. He's always doing some cool stuff.
I've heard literally dozens of people call themselves or call other people the best trainer in New York. We're going to need to have some sort of like Hunger Games-esque competition to find the best trainer in New York, because I'm sick and tired of not knowing who it is.
Yeah.
Albert, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you,
always a pleasure chatting, and I'm glad we could actually get one of our talks on the air. This one may be a little toned down compared to some of the others we've had, so I do appreciate that. Thanks for joining us.
Much appreciated, David. Great job, man.